Hello and welcome to The Modern Enthusiast. I'm Doug.
I'm Adam.
And I'm James.
And we are bringing you this week a whole bunch of discussion about cards in Modern that you didn't know were in Modern, as well as how to build mana bases. We had a reader question about that. Last week, if you didn't catch it, we talked about the Treasure Cruise Delver decks, how to play them and how to beat them. And James had mentioned to play Boggles because it crushes that deck, and somebody apparently did in the Star City IQ premiere this weekend. So James, you can have your premiere. I told your mandatory. I told you so.
I told you so.
Okay, so we are going to start off. Modern is a very deep card pool, and we are going to be chatting about it. Cards you didn't know were in Modern. And before we go into that, if you while you were listening to this, think of cards that we missed or that you wanted to add to the list or talk about, you can reach us on Twitter. Our handle there is Modern Podcast, or you can go to the show notes on mtgcast.com. You can subscribe to our long-awaited RSS feed there, and you can find our email address, and you can comment with us on the site. And we certainly listen and read everything that comes our way. We've gotten a few comments about the Modern Premier League that we're starting, and things are going along well on that. So if you want to find out more about it, hit back to last week's episode. Give that one a listen. Give us an email afterward. So Adam, when we were talking before the cast, Adam had mentioned that 8th Edition, which is the oldest set in Modern, was really the last set to have a whole bunch of really serious color-hosing cards in it. And Adam, you had brought up that the premier one in your mind was Circle of Protection Red, right?
Yeah, mentioned. I was the first one we were talking about.
And that's just a card that they don't make anymore because they don't want to have entire strategies and standards shut down by one card.
The closest I think you get to hosers like that were, I think it's from Theros. There's a destroy a mountain, deal 3 damage to that mountain's controller. And there's a cycle of those that do like one thing to a color. That's the Gainsay and the green fight card, that stuff. I think that's sort of as close as they get to color hosing now.
Yes.
Blizzard has tried hosing a couple times since then. There's the cycle of M14 creatures that are supposed to be color hosers with Lifebane Zombie and Mind Sparker.
Those were ridiculously...
And good luck if you can remember anyone that's not Lifebane Zombie.
The Merfolk ones he's so
time to time. Tidebinder Mage,
Tidebinder Mage, but... Like, and the set that had Celestial Purge the first time has some more color hosers, the likes of which I can't remember now, but I know they exist.
I think that's Conflux, isn't it?
Yeah, so we have a nice long list of stuff to chat about. So one of the things I noticed was that in 8th edition there's Circle of Protection Red, and there's also Sanctimony in the same set. Sanctimony's one and a white, it's an enchantment, and whenever an opponent taps a mountain for mana, you gain a life. So they were, and I think I remember that time in Magic, they were super hateful about burn decks and red aggro around that time. Because people were like, are you even kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? There's two directly on point white cards that hate burn decks, period.
We've gotten some cards like that since then, too. Core Firewalker was...
Certainly.
...a giant hoser, although when it existed in Standard, the mono red deck was very good also. Mm-hmm. And, Timely Reinforcements is also a pretty big game against burn and very aggressive decks. So
one thing, this set also has Boil in it, Destroy All Islands. It's red and 3 colorless, and it's an instant, so the idea being that you can end-step it on people. Another land destruction card, it's not from that set, but it's one that we're putting in our category of don't forget that this is in Modern, is Thoughts of Ruin. It's 2 red-red, sorcery. Each player sacrifices a number of lands equal to the amount of cards you have in your hand. So they could be 2 or 3 or 4. Certainly, if your previous turn involved a Delver of Secrets or a Young Pyromancer, then following up with a Thoughts of Ruin is particularly brutal. And I think against decks for whom Blood Moon won't do a whole lot, I'm thinking decks like the Mirror, Twin, things like that, where Twin's not really going to get hosed by a Blood Moon because they play their own. Still, nailing 3 of their lands is brutal against them.
And, yeah, we talked about this card for a minute before the cast, too. And James mentioned that card is pretty awesome with Treasure Cruise.
Oh, yeah, well. Certainly, so, because you can Treasure Cruise and fill up your hand.
You have 4 lands, and you've presumably fetched for a couple of them, and all of a sudden your treasure cruise is completely powered up and you're only paying one for it. So
yeah, and so, you know, if you treasure cruise before it and you load up your hand and Armageddon the board, that's awesome. And if you treasure cruise afterward off of just an island and refill and then you see more lands, that's also really good. So yeah, maybe if you're looking for your tech for the Delver decks, we were chatting on the last week's cast about how the Delver deck can run out of steam and it can get outclassed by larger creatures and more powerful decks if it loses its control of the tempo of the game. That hitting somebody with the Thoughts of Ruin is, first of all, it's going to be totally out of left field, and also it can slow somebody right back down to functionally turn one or turn two.
It falls into that category that I think we come back to every couple weeks, basically, about very, like, cards that have really powerful effects that just don't have a home.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So another four drop that I had found, and I, you know, this was only an oversight for me, was that Concentrate is in Modern. It's blue-blue two sorcery, draw three cards. I think when you're doing deck building and you're thinking, like, you have a lot of mana in the mid-game, you have something that you need to refuel on, and maybe you're not playing a deck that runs Cryptic Command, that tapping out to Concentrate feels really nice sometimes. There's also Harmonize in the format, which is the green color-shifted version of that. It's useful stuff when you're deck building to be able to know that those things exist to plug in the gaps. I don't think Inspiration is Modern playable, but I think Concentrate certainly could be, because cards like Careful Consideration have seen play in the past. Mystical Teachings sees fringe play. Compulsive Research, things like that.
Thirst
Phrenology, yeah, certainly is a solid tier 2 card. James, what is on your list of cards you should remember are in Modern?
The first one I had on my list was Plex Manta, which is a card I think most people don't know. It's a 1 and a blue for a 2/2 with flash. When it comes into play, creatures you control can't be the target of spells or abilities this turn. And if you don't pay a green, you have to sacrifice it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a nice creature for giving your guys that sudden bit of uncounterability or invulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
In the face of a lot of removal spells. It's not great for protecting combos like Splinter Twin, unfortunately, because it just can't be target spells or abilities. But for decks like Zoo, especially the Zoo lists that are splashing five colors of Zoo, or aggressive decks that are in a rug color, it's certainly a card that protects your creatures from a lot of the very common modern cards while adding to the board. It's a flash threat. And it does all of your creatures, so it's a card that counters like an entire Electrolyze if someone's targeting two of your guys in a Kiki Pod type build. It's a card that sits out there and protects a lot of your creatures in a lot of different matchups. As I said, especially Kiki Pod, Zoo, like the new kind of mid-rangey rug decks that are starting to populate up, depending on Slow Track Rug Delver. It's a card that you can slot in to protect your guys while adding to your board, which is something you can't say for a lot of the other protection spells that people put for their creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Also, just has really cool art. Other cards I had on my list were Ricochet and Refraction Trap. Refraction Trap is kind of the counter to a Lightning Bolt. It's 3 and a white, and it has a trap cost of if your opponent has played a red, instant, or sorcery spell this turn, you can pay it for 1 white instead of for its cost. And it's prevent the next 3 damage a source of your choice would deal, and it redirects it to another target of your choice. So one of the interesting things about Refraction Trap is that you can use it to not only prevent the Lightning Bolt, but prevent the Lightning Bolt from targeting you or a creature you control, and then target your opponent's Delver or their Young Pyromancer or their Dome with your burn spell. And again, it's a card that can fit into Zoo decks. It can, I actually think, be worth investigating in Pod decks, given Pod decks difficulty at dealing with the amount of burn that a Delver deck can throw at their creatures. It can place in almost any white deck, and it prevents the damage from a Lightning Bolt. And really, I mean, it's probably the best counter to a Lightning Bolt ever, because not only does it counter the damage, but it lets you kind of hijack that Lightning Bolt. Ricochet Trap, on the other hand, is another interesting card to know. It's 3 and a red, and it changes the target to target spell with a single target, and its trap cost is 1 red if your opponent has cast a blue spell this turn. So one of the places I really like Ricochet Trap is if you're playing Scape Shift. One of the cards that's very common to board in Scape Shift is the uncountable counterspells. And Ricochet Trap is a 1 red answer to that. You just redirect the counterflux from Scape Shift to the Ricochet Trap itself for your 1 red cost. The Ricochet Trap resolves. The Counterflux fizzles because it's an illegal target. Your Scapeshift will then resolve. It's a good way of winning a counter war. It's a good way of tricking your opponent because you can leave up a Strange Color of Mana. You can leave up a Valakut. You can leave up, you know, another card, like a Stomping Grounds.
Your opponent, red green land.
Yeah, your Stomping Grounds. In your opponent, your basic mountain. It's not a card that a lot of opponents are going to think of. Also, for 4 mana, it's just not the worst card in Modern to redirect certain spells. I mean, it's expensive, push comes to shove fork, but also in Delver Mirrors, it, you know, counters counter spells, it counters, or changes direction of bounce spells. I think both these cards are fairly important to keep in mind as the format goes forward, because they're very high impact for kind of the very low cost of 1 mana, and they're very good against widely played cards. The other card I was thinking, and it's less important now than it was a couple months ago, is Dodecapod. Dodecapod is a 3/3 artifact creature for 4, but when an opponent causes you to discard it, it comes into play as a 5/5 for free. This is a card that you can play basically if you're not playing green.
Otherwise, you'd play the Obstinate Baleth.
Or
the Wiltleaf Liege.
It's either the Obstinate Baleth or the Wiltleaf Liege, but if you're not playing green, if you're playing another deck that really has trouble with Liliana's, this is a card where your opponent's like Liliana, or also if you just don't want to pay the money for an Obstinate Baleth, which is 6, and a Wiltleaf Liege is like 20-something now because of its legacy implications. This is a card where your opponent points to Liliana at you and says discard, and you put a creature into play that is likely bigger than a Tarmogoyf, very easily going to pressure a Liliana, costs 4, so it's hard to kill with an Abrupt Decay. So it's a very good answer to those decks when they're like, will each player discard a card? You're like, yes, we will, but I'll make a 5/5.
Latin on Smiter has that same ability,
too. Yeah, Latin on Smiter, they're like, as I said, you know, not green. Because, like, if you're playing green, one of those other 3 options is likely better. But if you're playing blue-white-red control, those junk decks are also kind of a difficult matchup. If you're playing blue-red Scapeshift, where Jundin is targeted discard was often a difficult matchup. If you're playing Splinter Twin, you know, a number of decks that just aren't playing green, it's a decent card. And the last card on my list that I was going to mention was Plaxcaster Frogling, which is kind of a weird card. But Plaxcaster Frogling is a 3/3 for 1 green blue with the graft mechanic. Now, the graft mechanic is kind of a strange mechanic. Whenever a creature comes into play, if you control a graft creature, you can put a 1/1 counter from your graft creature onto that creature. The thing that makes Plaxcaster Frogling so interesting is that he has 2 mana target creature with a 1/1 counter on it, basically getting Shroud. And it's a card that you can play in...
till the end of turn.
Yeah, Shroud till the end of turn. It's a card that you can play in these... as I said, there's this kind of a rash of mid-rangey rug decks that are popping up now to take advantage of Treasure Cruise. And it's a card I really like. One of the things it does is it makes your Tarmogoyf bigger than their Tarmogoyf, because it gets up 1. And, like, playing Plaxcaster Frogling on 3, and then playing a Tarmogoyf and leaving up the 2 mana to grafting and leaving up the 2 mana to activate is actually not the worst card you're going to find. And it makes your opponent kill this irrelevant, like, you know, 2-2 first. You're still getting value. You can hold up, you know, Remand. Is the format kind of is changing and swinging away from the very traditional pod decks and, you know, some of the other combo decks we've seen to decks that are more designed to fight these Delver decks? I think playing some more mid-rangey green threats is a good place to be. And I think Plaxcaster Frogling and Plaxmata are cards that are kind of, you won't think about them, but they have kind of some strong potential. And all these cards have been, like, tournament-winning cards in the past, most of them in their day in Standard, but they're all very powerful cards that are easy to forget.
Plaxcaster Frogling is kind of like an aggressive spell skite, if you want to save your guys.
Yeah, I was also going to say, keeping cards like this in mind is really important because as the format continues to evolve, people are always going to be looking for the next, you know, piece of technology that's going to give you an edge in a tournament. And a lot of times, you know, those, they are cards or decks or combinations of cards that you didn't think about before that, you know, have been under the radar. In many cases, like James said, they have been, you know, tournament-winning decks in the past in various formats or have been very playable at one time or another. So, yeah, definitely cards like that are something to keep in mind.
So another card on my list is Karma. And Karma, it goes all the way back to Alpha. It's two colorless and white-white. It's an enchantment. Each player's upkeep, they take damage equal to the number of swamps that they control. Now, Karma is kind of interesting because it is a two-card kill combo with Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth, being that you can slot a Karma or two into your deck and then some Urborgs in your mana base, and you will kill an opponent as long as they get burned out first by it. It's very hard to counter and get rid of, and as the game goes longer, it does more and more damage. Meanwhile, you could be playing, if you're playing a deck with Karma in it, maybe you're playing also Rune Halo in it, so you can Rune Halo your own Karma and never take damage from it. Karma's also a very fine card against black-green X decks because they can't Abrupt Decay it. So if you can somehow manage to keep that card in your hand until turn 4 and play it, then they're going to have a very hard time dealing with the extra 2 or 3 damage it's going to deal to them every single turn. I keep Karma in mind. I've seen a lot of the, I think Travis Wu calls it, the Pillow Fort style deck, where you make a whole bunch of white defensive enchantments, and then you make it so that it's very hard to attack you. Those decks often win with Luminarch Ascension or things like that, or Sigil of the Empty Throne, and I feel like I would just much rather run Karma and Urborg in those spots. It's an elegant kill. You can also have, after you've cast what's the epic spell, Eternal, the white epic spell. Now I'm turning into James here. People are listening to the podcast and shouting it right now. You can also find your Karma and still play a land out of your hand to play your Urborg, so that's a possibility.
You guys are pathetic. Enduring ideal.
Thank you. Another card, probably not playable, has not stopped me from trying to play it before, Hammer Bogarden. One red, sorcery, 3 damage to something. You can pay 2 red during your upkeep to return it to your hand. It's reusable damage. We don't have Punishing Fire in the format. I don't know that paying 8 mana to Punishing Fire something is worth it, but it is good to keep in mind because it can come back in the face of discard. And sometimes I have had a number of modern games that are kind of draw-go. And if you know, for example, you're playing a deck like Scapeshift where you have access to a lot of mana but you don't have a lot of card draw, sometimes being able to just pull business back during your upkeep matters. I mean, it's the same reason I think of Exile into Darkness from, I think, Betrayers or Saviors, where it's 4 and a black, and opponent sacrifices a creature whose cost is 3 or less, and then you return it to your hand during your upkeep if you have more cards than them. Cards like that where if you can get 2 or 3 activations off of it, you're in good shape.
All of our listeners are now wondering if it's 2014 or 2001 out, but...
Well, I mean, I think part of my great enjoyment of Modern is knowing about these cards and sometimes actually playing them.
If playing, a blue-white-red mirror ever became something you had to extensively plan for, a card like that could be, an okay sideboard card or... something you just have as a random one of, because that's a deck that wants a lot of mana and that usually gets to a lot of mana by the end of the game. So being able to do that and not care about counter spells or whatnot is cool. The fact that it's a sorcery is kind of...
Yeah, that sucks.
And that you have to pay the 5 only on your upkeep. But
it's also, I just thought as we were talking about this, another set of cards that I think is probably worth keeping in mind in Modern, especially, is the combination of Pulse of the Forge and Pulse of the Fields. Pulse of the Forge is 1 red, and it does 4 to your opponent, and Pulse of the Fields is 1 white, and you gain 4 life. And then they share the same last clause, which is that if you have less life than your opponent when they resolve, you get them back to your hand. Pulse of the Forge is an interesting option as a 1 or a 2 in these Delver decks, because I've played Blue-Red Delver, and a lot of times your Fetch, Shock, Delver, Probe, I'm at 6, and that you might actually be able to get them back. And Pulse of the Fields is one of those cards that helps a control deck come back to life from the late game.
Yeah, unfortunately, you can't mana burn yourself down to be able to return Pulse of the Forge anymore. But for burn players, it is an instant, bear that in mind. You can instep it. It does 4 to a player, so it's like Flames of the Blood Hand in that regard. It's quite efficient for that. But, I mean, I think if I were playing burn and I had Pulse of the Forge in there, I would recklessly shock myself and lightning bolt myself to get my life total down so that you can keep pulsing them.
It's a little tough because, like, at 3 for 4 damage, you could also play Flame Javelin.
Or Char.
Which can also hit a creature. And so you don't quite have the flexibility. Like, you have the repeated burn, but I don't think, at least, that Flame Javelin gets played in any of the burn decks. I'm not saying that it can't, but I don't think I've seen it at all. Mm-hmm. So you've got... There's obviously the trade-off, like, you know, you could potentially be able to play Pulse of the Forge twice or more, you know, if something has gone terribly wrong. But it's something to consider. I actually very much like the idea of Pulse of the Fields in a control deck, just because yourself, with your fetch lands and your shock lands, do... some amount. I think most modern decks probably do between 3 and 6 damage to themselves in a given game, and the Delver decks can do quite a bit more to themselves between probing and Taxian probing cards like that. Mm-hmm. But doing that damage to yourself and having this card that sort of refills you, and you know, when you play it right, it can sort of be like fog. And replay it and keep going over and over again. So, yeah, that's another one of those cards that slots nicely potentially into a deck like that. And there's a lot of white decks that, like any deck that's playing white, that's a card basically that you can consider.
Mm-hmm. Also, Bogart Hammer is a card that's just dying for a modern update, Wizards. You guys can please get on this. Like, you know, he gives Aetherlings the upgrade. Hammer Bogart was like a card where, I mean, if you're not an older Magic player, and I don't know how many listeners are, that card was an extreme tournament staple, $10 card, Pro Tour winning card. In fact, there's a whole Pro Tour with, I want to say, John Finkel and somebody else that's just completely decided by, you know, hitting lands and Hammer Bogarting each other. It is a, like, one of those great historical cards that I would love to see get a modern, fresh remake that is tournament playable in older formats, much like Morphling, Wild Mongol. They're just older cards I would like to see get kind of fresh. This is what this card looks like now with the power creep. That is a card I would love to see.
All you have to do to that card to make it playable in a newer format would be to get rid of the return on your upkeep caveat. To cast it could still be a sorcery because it's 3 to cast, right?
Correct.
Like, casting it could still be a sorcery, but being able to return it on your opponent's end step, like just making that be 5 mana, return it to your hand, you can keep the same cost, can do be the exact same card, but you get to return it whenever you have 5 open mana. I think that almost instantly makes it a card like in a burn deck or a control deck that a red control deck that is like this repeatable source of damage and/or removal.
But that is a card I would love to see a modern update of.
I do recall that there was a deck, we'll go down memory lane here, there was a standard deck, 1997 or 98 maybe, that used Forbid and Hammer Bogarden, with the idea being that you'd use Nivinural's Disc and Lightning Bolt and stuff to kill early threats, you'd have counters up, and then once you hit 8 mana, every upkeep you could return Hammer Bogarden to your hand, and then use the card that you drew to pay the buyback on Forbid, so that you could lock your opponent out, and every single turn, even if they didn't cast something, you'd have 5 mana left, you know, spare the next upkeep. And so you could play, you could burn them, you could return another hammer to your hand, you could use that end of turn mana to cast Whispers of the Muse, things like that. I think that the mono blue deck that just ran Whispers and Ophidian ended up being a better deck, but there was a counter hammer deck that, based on how ridiculous Forbid was, you know, blue 1, counter a spell, buy back this card, 2 cards. Just based on how nuts that was, that people were able to use a primitive recursion engine like Shard Phoenix and Hammer Bogarden.
That sounds like a deck that I would love, and it's too bad that in 1997 I was 9 and not playing Magic.
You would have to run Phyrexian Furnace to remove your opponent's hammers. That was part of the tech, by the way. So here's another card to think about too, another old like Revenge of 1995 card, is that there is a Dark Confidant budget version for burn decks, and it is on color, and it's a nickel, and it is Orcish Librarian. And it is 1 and a red, it's a 1/1, and its ability is pay a red mana and tap it. Remove the top 8 cards from your library, randomly exile 4 of them, look at the remaining four and put them back on your library in any order that you choose. So, just like Dark Confident, it has to live to your next upkeep. But if you're playing a burn deck, and I'm saying burn because burn is a highly redundant deck, and you don't want to whiff with it, you have Orcish Librarian, you pay red during your upkeep, you can make sure that your top draw or two will always be a burn spell. And it doesn't matter if you're exiling four cards every turn, because it doesn't matter. Your deck has 30 burn spells in it. And Orcish Librarian saw a tiny bit of play in Standard because it was time-shifted. It was originally an Ice Age. But it saw play in the green-red aggro decks, with the idea being that all your creatures are interchangeable. You want to be able to get the best card so you can impulse every turn to get the, you know, the best burn spell up to the top of your library.
Also, you're playing a card called Orcish Librarian, which
and the picture
has a certain amount of value.
The picture is crazy, too. I think it's a Phil Folio picture, and it's a librarian eating paste and chomping down on a book. You want to talk about cards that are in Modern? Here's a card I wish was in Modern. Browse. Browse was an incredible card. I think I try and fit that in every casual deck I make. And it's Curiosario in Portuguese. That's my Browse that I play with.
So, somebody should 3-1 or 4-0 a daily now with Burn with four Orcish Librarians in it.
And then we'll have something to talk about.
And we'll talk about it again. Because my proudest Magic Online moment was 3-1-ing a Modern daily with an Arcanist, the Omnipotent, in my deck. And that's online somewhere, and Wizards can't make that go away.
So. And you own that. Well, we're going to shift topics a little bit here. James played a fascinating deck last week that I want to ask him a little bit more about. And James, the origin of it, tell us. The deck basically had no counter spells in it. It was red, white, and blue, so Jeskai for the reconstructed here.
Patriot.
Yeah. Team America. But it didn't have any counter spells in it, and in their place it had four Jeskai Charm and four Boros Charm. Tell us how this deck came about and what you discovered from it.
Well, the deck came about because I went and dug my normal deck, and I was scrambling around for a deck to play. And I had parts of a deck my friend Corey had played, and parts of a Legacy deck, and parts of a different Modern deck. And so I just kind of sat them out at my desk and figured out what I was going to play. But there's some more thought behind it. One of my base premises for not wanting to play any counter spells is that I've played enough of the blue-red Delvermeer that that deck only has 12 creatures. I mean, 16 at a maximum. Having a lot of removal spells for their creatures and for your opponent's face if you're ahead feels really good, because if you're behind on the board, a bunch of removal will catch you back up. And if you're ahead on the board, a bunch of removal will finish your opponent off. You can't say that with counterspells. If you're behind on the board, Reman doesn't do anything. And if you're ahead on the board, Reman can buy you tempo, but there's this principle I learned when I was playing the Boggle deck last year. If your opponent's spell costs one and your counters all cost two, they will get to play more spells in a turn. So, like, the typical scenario is that you're like, they're like Lightning Bolt and you're like Reman, and then they cast Lightning Bolt again. That's the same amount of mana. You guess you've drawn a card, but the Lightning Bolt is still going to kill whatever it was aimed at. So the interesting issues there were, I want to play Geist of St. Traps in this format. I think having a card that just blanks Lightning Bolt, Vapor Stag, and Shock is really good when you get to play these Delver decks. They're like, I have this Delver, here's my suite, here's how I interact with you, and you're like, I have this guy you can't interact with. They don't have a lot of flyers. Delver is smaller than an Angel Token. So a lot of it comes down to, I wanted to play Geist of St. Traps and I wanted to play a lot of removal. Boros Charm was just kind of cute as a way to protect the Geist of St. Traps and as a way of doing 4 damage. I think if I were to play the deck again, I would likely cut Boros Charm. Jeskai Charm is awesome and is a lot more playable in Modern than I would have ever dreamed. I cast all 3 modes multiple times.
Well, the lifelink +1/+1 is great with Geist of St. Traps.
That has the most blowout potential.
So you gain 8 life.
They block, you gain 8 life, and, you know, the most common things that block are Snapcaster Mages and Young Pyromancer tokens, so getting to be like a 3-3 is just huge. And it's like, well, now my guy survived. You took 5, I gained 8. It's a 13-point life swing. So that worked out very well. I also tried some fun things in the mana base, including Trilands. And while I'm not sure I would recommend a mana base entirely consisting of Trilands, I found that there was a certain bit of pleasure I got out of having a land that I never had to worry about what other spells were in my hand or balancing my lands. It didn't hurt me to play. I didn't have to take damage. It didn't have any weird, you know, triggers. It came into play tapped, and it just always added one mana and killer to the deck.
Did you play Colonnades in that deck?
I played two Colonnades. I really like Colonnades in this format. So it had 6 point tap sources, which is probably too many for a Delver deck. And I think I probably would play more than one, like, Tri-Land if I played any. But I can tell you from experience now that you will not lose that much if you are a budget player playing Tri-Lands in this format.
In that vein, I think a while ago when we were looking at the cons spoiler for the first or second time, we talked about some of that, and I think Doug actually asked me, because we'd gotten an email about like a more budget blue-white-red mana base, so I think we talked about that briefly in one of the shows, and I think the question was, do you think the Tri-Lands are playable in Modern? And under the same postulate that we talked about before with some of those sideboard cards, that all of those Tri-Lands, the first round, the Alara ones, were all extremely playable in Standard at the time, and if you're not playing too many man lands, or you would prefer the triple fixing as opposed to the two-color fixing and something else, you're deciding which upside you want more, basically. And I agree that I think those are probably pretty playable. You don't want tons of them, but definitely supplementing even a mana base that you're not trying to budget in any way, if it might be the, you know, the optimum thing.
You know, that's got me thinking that I might want to try the Rug Tri-Lands in Scapeshift for the reason that a lot of the games, you know, you certainly want to have your turn one search for tomorrows, but when you don't have those, you want to be able to access all three colors on turn two because you have Izzet Charm, and you have Man, and you have Secure Tri-Builder. And there's a lot of cards. James, you talk about just the comfort of being, knowing that you don't have to work to get any of that, and especially in Scapeshift, getting red sources without getting mountains is a big deal. That's why I like the Cascade Bluffs in it, but maybe I'll be trying to cut the Cascade Bluffs and put in the Tri-Land for that spot.
The full spectrum fixing for no like life cost seems pretty good, too. So obviously the downside is they come into play tapped, so the most you want, or the best time to play them, basically, is, you know, turn one. That's when you want to be playing tap land. But, yeah, the comfort of having that, it seems like might be worth a look. Or especially in a deck like Scapeshift, it's not playing, like, the blue-white-red four Celestial Colonnade kind of thing. So
interestingly, the card I liked the least, the card I would also have to find a replacement for, was Delver himself. Mm-hmm. I have found that in formats full of a lot of Delver decks that one of the first things everyone does is, you know, kind of pass their first turn with a Lightning Bolt. So you play turn one Delver, and he's usually met with turn one Lightning Bolt. Then you know, your opponent plays with a Delver, and it's usually met with a Lightning Bolt. And where I didn't mind Young Pyromancer being very fragile because he tended to make 1 to 2 tokens even when he went early. When your Delver goes right away, it doesn't feel very good. And so, in the deck featured Geist of St. Traft and Young Pyromancer, I think maybe the next time I try it, I think it will probably not play the Delvers in favor of playing 4 Snapcaster Mages. I had played no Snapcaster Mages, which I also kind of liked, because it's nice to not have to worry about what you're going to delve out when you Treasure Cruise, when you just pick up the top 7 cards of your library and kind of toss them and to draw 3 cards. It's a lot nicer than when you have to figure out which one or two spells I want to stay behind. I also played 4 Path to Exiles in the deck, and I was not fond of Path to Exiles format right now. Previously, I had always liked Path to Exile Modern because there wasn't a lot that people could do to take advantage of the mana you gave them. So you would path them, they would get a land, and it didn't change a whole lot. Now that one land may mean the difference between the whole turn that they can Treasure Cruise, or, and what's even worse with Treasure Cruise decks is that, you know, they draw 3 cards, and they play a bunch more cards, and then, you know.
Well, it's the Delver decks. They're designed to operate on you know, two or three lands, so giving them a free one, I don't want to say it's playing into their hands, but it's a downside to a deck that is already outcarding you and trying to out, you know, value, and tempo you. I find that interesting because I played, the Geist version a few weeks ago, and my deck was pretty different, from James, but I found Path to be the card that I wanted like six or eight of because it was the card that got, you know, killed anything no matter what, and it was able to get, your Geist of St. Traft, through. So, a little bit of a difference there, so we'll have to compare the exact lists. And
certainly.
Yeah, mine had some counter spells, so not quite as much burn. Not nearly as much burn, actually. But, yeah.
So we also had a reader question who wrote in to ask us about how we build mana bases in Modern. James, maybe you could tell us more.
So, someone had asked us how you build a mana base in Modern, what lands you consider, how do you know what the optimum number for of which lands is and what you want to run. And kind of my first answer to this is, there's a Frank Karsten article on TCG Player, or not TCG Player, on Channel Fireball, about statistically how many colored mana sources you need to do, and finding an optimal mana curve. It's like a 2013 Frank Karsten article. Most of the very good Magic deck builders I know and players I know have this article saved to their favorites page, and basically they do a lot of math and figuring out what sources they want using his mathematic equations. I'm not really a math kind of guy. In fact,
that's why we're lawyers.
I'm lucky if I can do basic math in my head, and I'm really lucky that you can count on your fingers and toes.
All three of us, by the way, I think are history majors.
Yes.
So yeah, I agree. I'm also not a
I have the kicker philosophy degree.
So my traditional plan for mana bases is I call up my buddy Jack or my friend Bernie and I say, hey, make me a mana base.
So I think here are some preliminary rules, okay? You probably want to start with 6 to 8 fetch lands because the fetch mana base gets you in your colors. If you have a 4-color mana base, then you run Mana Confluence, probably. So Jeskai Ascendancy runs it, that deck. If you have a 3-color mana base, you run 8 fetch lands, at least 1 shock of each color, and then a second shock of the colors that you're looking for most, and then you're looking to pad out with highly functional utility lands, so Raging Ravine and Celestial Colonnade, for example.
Tectonic Edge.
And Tectonic Edge, and you pad that out, but you want to make sure you have one of each basic and one of each shock that, or one of all the basics that you know you need if you get Blood Moon. If you have 2 colors, so Splinter Twin, Blue-Red Splinter Twin. And also if you're playing 3 colors or 2 colors, you run the check lands like Sulphur Falls, Hinterland Harbor, that look to see if you already have an island in play and then make the other Glacial Fortress. If you have two colors, you run 6 to 8 fetch lands, you run 3 on-color shock lands, because you really don't need the 4th for the most part. And then you can run up to 4 to 5 utility lands, and those can even be colorless lands. So, Tectonic Edges, Splinter Twin runs 1 to 2 Desolate Lighthouse, which I really like in that deck. And past that, you can pad out with 2 filter lands, 2 to 3 check lands. And that's how I build my mana bases. It's a sliding scale of greediness. Because the most greedy is like 4 Tectonic Edge, and then you scale down from there depending on how many more colors you're running. That's how I build mana bases. I'm not great at it. I mostly just net deck.
I think there's a distinction between a mana base for a Delver deck or a Zoo deck or a Control deck, and for like a hyper aggressive multicolored aggro deck or for a combo deck. So we have a buddy who plays the Bloom Titan deck, and he's got Gemstone Mine and Tendo Ice Bridges.
Nintendo Power, yeah.
And now he's got, that deck plays a bunch of the bounce lands, so you get to take advantage of the fact that those add colored, they only add colored mana like a finite number of times, because you can put them back in your hand and replay them. But in combo decks, sometimes running a card like Gemstone Mine, it has the downside of only tapping for mana 3 times before it goes away, but it gives you any color you need, and it comes into play untapped, and it doesn't have, like, a paying life drawback. In the same vein, Mana Confluence and City of Brass are good for things like that. But I think that those 5-color ping lands are also good in, or can be playable in decks that are incredibly aggressive in trying to do 20 really quickly. So, like, a 3- or 4-color burn deck where they fix for all of your colors all the time is fine, because if you take 4 or 5 extra damage from yourself, it's not a big deal because your opponent is on the defensive, and if you're at the point where you're, like, where you're on the defensive, it doesn't matter what your lands do because you're losing the game no matter what.
I think you always, always want to prioritize comes into play tap or untapped over anything else. You want to be able to use your lands the turn you use that you get them. You know, Celestial Colonnade gets a pass because it turns into a friggin' Sarah Angel. Raging Ravine for the same sort of role, but those are the only lands I can think of that really consistently come into play tapped. Valakut never comes into play tapped without your opponent dying immediately. But those are the only ones I can think of that people put up with that downside. I mean, temples are just not a card that gets played in Modern, and I would much rather run 8 or 10 different lands than temples in my 2-color deck, because I would just much rather be able to do what I to execute my plan on time.
I like spell lands a lot, so I consider spell lands cards like Colonnade, Raging Ravine, Desolate Lighthouse,
and Mirror the Moaning Edge. Well.
Yeah. Any land, whether or not it taps for a mana, since in the modern age of Magic, all lands tap for at least a colorless mana. I like cards that do, I like lands that do, or that have an effect, and do something in addition, or tap for a mana, but also have an effect that is relevant to the game. So Desolate Lighthouse is awesome for that. Tectonic Edge is awesome for that. All the man lands, are awesome for that reason. So in a deck, in a control deck where you're playing, you know, 24 or 25 plus lands, having some good percentage of those lands also do something is really important. And the fact that cards like Colonnade fix is also really good. So the only lands that you don't have access to in Modern that you do in, like, a Legacy or Vintage format are the real dual lands, basically.
Yes.
And so I think that there's not, I don't think you're limited too much by budget or, like, card pool in Modern for building a real playable mana base. So I think my 3-color decks typically start with 6 or 8 fetch lands, 5 shock lands, so 2 and 2 for, like, some of your main colors. So I have 2 Hallow Fountains, 2 Steam Vents, and then 1 of the other of the third combination, so 1 Sacred Foundry, because sometimes you have hands where you've got a couple basic islands and you want the other 2 colors. I like running at least a few basics in every Modern mana base, because Blood Moon is a card, and if Blood Moon is good against your deck, you want to have fetch lands and basic lands for you to go play around it, so that when it comes into play, you are not just dead. And filling in the space in between your Tectonic Edges, your basics, your shocks, and your fetches, you have your Celestial Colonnades and some other of your spell lands, but you also have the Buddy lands, which I like a lot, the Sulphur Falls, Glacial Fortress, all of those. And I like the combination of shock lands and Buddy lands, because you get to play a lot of duels and fix pretty easily for not a huge cost. I also think that the fast lands from Scars of Mirrodin are pretty good, and they have seen some play. I think Blackcleave Cliffs, which is the black-red one, was popular in Jund mana bases.
Yes, it was.
A while ago. I think that's the only one that's seen a lot of play.
Yeah, Seachrome Coast and Blue-White Tron is all I can think of otherwise.
I've seen Seachrome Coast and Dark Slick Shores in other decks.
The green-white one was a staple for the green-white
Horizon Canopies. Horizon Canopy is another one of those awesome spell land cards. It's absolutely outstanding. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it fixes, and then when you don't want a land, or if you draw a land, you're like, well, I don't need this land, I want a, you know, I want another card. It finds a new one. Other duels that I have liked at various times, I love River of Tears. It was an awesome land in Fairies. I don't think Fairies is very good, but River of Tears was always a solid dual land. If we're going to go back to man lands, I think they're all good, so I think Creeping Tar Pit is really good. Then you have other ones like Treetop Village.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I do a quick count of the number of colored mana symbols I have of each color in my deck, and check that against the number of sources in my mana base that can get that color. So if I have 20 white mana symbols and only 5 white sources in my mana base, something is askew.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, gold fishing and playing solitaire magic and asking yourself, why can't I cast this card right now? You get a real sense for, like, darn it, I always get to turn 4, I have 4 lands, and I can never cast Cryptic Command. Maybe I need to be running filter lands. That will put, you know, if I run 2 or 3 filter lands, I get Cryptic Command much easier. In thoughtful solitaire magic play, I think, is a great sense of how frequently you can cast a Lightning Helix, for example.
Yeah, goldfish your deck a few times. After you build it, goldfish it a couple times, see, you know, do I have to cast Noble Hierarch on one and then something else on, you know, whatever else you're doing, and can I do that? Do I have enough untapped green sources on turn 1 that my mana dorks are being played on turn 1 as opposed to turn 2, or how often do I need to play Lightning Helix?
Mm-hmm. So if you're playing,
how easy is it for me to get red white?
Yeah, and if you're playing Splinter Twin, for example, it's like if you're playing a Kiki Jiki, how often do you have 3 red sources? And is it a matter of playstyle where you say, maybe I shouldn't be fetching as many islands, I need to be getting more steam vents? Or is it an issue of you really do need to be running 2 Cascade Bluffs? Just playing it out, I think, really makes a huge difference there.
To answer the question of how I build my mana base, it is not a scientific formula. It's more of an I eyeball it, or the Dublin, I guess the combination of all of ours. You know, it's eyeball it, goldfish it, does it work?
How greedy can you get away with?
How much can you get away with? Is it close to a mana base that some proven tournament-winning deck has used? And if all else fails, call Jack.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tend to yield to the guys I know who are better. The one thing you do want to keep in mind when you're building a mana base is there's a certain amount of balancing that needs to be done when you come to basics and non-basics for things like Blood Moon or Sundering Titan and what's in your metagame. If you're a lot of Blutron in your metagame, having a metagame, having a deck of all Shocklands, if your opponents play a lot of Burn or a lot of Tron with Sundering Titan, you're going to get really punished either for that 2 damage or having that land type on there. Whereas if your metagame is kind of soft in those decks, you can play more Shocklands. So a lot of it really depends on what you're planning on seeing. So getting a couple of man lands, getting a couple of filters, but also just knowing what's very common, what you're very likely to run up against and where your limitations are. There are a lot of very powerful hosers in Modern when it comes to land bases. For some strange reason, people are really obsessed with Boil and Choke. I have been boiled and I have been choked while playing decks that are really strong against those
cards. Yeah, those cards do nearly nothing.
And people still play them. So it is good to keep in mind that if that is something that people are doing, knowing that playing a few more of the blue-red buddy land,
Sulfur Falls. Yeah, that's definitely Sulfur something. Sulfur
Falls. Like, knowing that people play more Chokes is a reason to play more Sulfur Falls.
Uh-huh.
Knowing that people are playing more Blood Moons, a reason to play more Basics and Fetches. So know your metagame and know what you're expected to get into. I mean, it really is. A lot of this is very regional dependent. Like, right now on Modo, there is a lot, I mean, an absolute lot, probably like 20-25% of your matches, of Delver decks. And a lot of those Delver decks have some number of Blood Moons. So be aware of that. If you're playing those Delver decks, be aware that lots of people really like Choke for some odd reason. And so you should be packing some more Sulfur Falls to protect yourself from the guys who are trying to choke you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, understand what hosers you're trying to play around with your mana base. So Choke is going to hose your basic islands, but Blood Moon is going to hose all of your dual lands. So yeah. understand what you have to play around with both of them, and you know, what are you more likely to see in your metagame, or what have you already seen in mm-hmm. your metagame? Like what
yeah.
what hosed you last week? You know, when you were playing. Other spell lands, by the way, that I like real quick are Gavinny Township and mm-hmm. Kessid Wolfrun, although I don't think Wolfrun has seen a lot of play. Wolfrun and Moorland Haunt were both huge cards when they were in Standard.
Big players.
And I think that those cards are both pretty playable. There's not a home for Moorland Haunt right now, because even the Geist decks I don't think play very many creatures. But the Standard versions that played Moorland Haunt didn't have too many creatures either. So I've always liked that card. Mm-hmm. I know the Standard versions played another one of my pet cards, which is Runechanter's Pike, because putting that on 1/1 tokens was always nice. So, lands that do things are awesome.
Yeah, you want to get as many as you can while still being able to execute your real plan.
I think Magic, as you get older in formats, is about being as greedy as you can be without actually killing yourself.
Yeah, like the blue-white-red Geist decks that run an Iganjo Castle for their Geist of St. Treff.
Yeah, exactly something like that. Run as many spell lands as you can where you're not just dying to yourself.
Yeah.
The black-green decks that played for Treetop Villages and for
Phyrexian Obliterators.
Four Treetop Villages and four Tectonic Edges, and
right.
You're like,
you want to... Yeah, basically be as greedy as you can be without killing yourself,
mm-hmm.
and the power level of what you're doing is great, because when all your opponent is doing are playing lands that don't do anything, and when they, you know, flood out at the end of the game and they go land, and they have nothing,
mm-hmm.
you go, you know, Treetop Village into Wolfrun or whatever, and all mm-hmm. of a sudden your lands are spells. And stuff like Wolfrun, and Desolate Lighthouse, all of those are awesome mana sinks that don't slow down your early game.
Yeah.
So you go, you know, in Pod, you can go Temple Garden into Mana Dork, and then you can play your Gavinny Township on turn two and still be able to cast
Birthing Pod
or Kitchen Finks or any of the spells you want to cast on curve.
Yep.
So.
Well, we have talked about a whole bunch of cards in Modern that we are happy in Modern, the Unsung Stars. We talked about James' Charm deck a little bit, and if you're interested, bug him on Twitter for the list, and he'll send it to you. We also extensively discussed how we build mana bases in Modern and the cards that you want to try and work in and that are fun to play. So if you have questions or comments, you can find us on Twitter. We're Modern Podcast. You can also find the show notes on mtgcast.com. The show is named Modern Enthusiast. I think this is our 18th or 19th episode. So if you've been listening since the beginning, thank you. Otherwise, get our RSS feed and download us to the beginning. And you'll hear us improve over time. Until next week, this has been the Modern Enthusiast, and I'm Doug.
I'm Adam.
I'm James.
Thanks for listening.